accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. First item of business is the approval of last month's minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, additions, deletions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, unanimous. Thank you. We'll move on to citizens' comments. Wes, you're up. If you would, please come forward. We'd like to get you on the. Jason, maybe you can.
Information packets for the members of the committee, if you want to.
Thank you.
Those around, you're very welcome.
We always need to give one to Marie first. Doesn't matter who else gets one. She needs it for part of the record.
I'm sure y'all have.
And I can get you an electronic copy of that as well.
Well, I think
to forward on it.
In the packet.
What you sent to me, I included in the meeting packet.
Fantastic. Well, again, my name is Wes McCadden, and I represent Medicare Air, and we're the helicopter ambulance service here in Charleston, preferred provider for the Medical University and Children's Hospital. More specifically, I represent the Air Medicare Network program on behalf of Medicare Air, and Air Medicare Network is just a very simple member-based program that eliminates the financial burden for families and households in the event someone under the roof of the house would be airlifted for a medical emergency. I don't know if you've ever had any exposure to that personally, and I hope not, but it's just extremely expensive when we have to fly somebody. Our average flight costs are in the tens of thousands of dollars, and why our program exists is that most insurance companies either don't cover it or they cover only a small portion of it. And that obviously can leave families with some pretty sizable out-of-pocket expense, added to which if we're coming, clearly somebody's in some pretty bad shape, so wherever we're taking you to, you're probably going to be there for a little bit of time, given the extent of the illness or injury, to allow time for both treatment and recovery. So we're kind of first in line in a number of big, ugly medical bills that's coming somebody's way, and if we can eliminate one of those for a household, it's great, but first and foremost, what we don't want is for somebody to second-guess taking that ride, especially when their life or limb could depend upon it, which is generally why we're coming, because they have fear of getting that big bill. So how the Air Medicare Network program works is very simple. As I said, it's a very simple member-based program that if you're flown, what's going to happen is we file through your insurance, and whatever the insurance company pays us, we accept that as final billing, and you're done. So if you were uninsured or underinsured, or the insurance company were to deny claim for whatever reason, you have no out-of-pocket expense for the flight. It's unlimited flight coverage for as long as you're a member, meaning that, God forbid, you would need it once, but if you had to be flown more than once from here to MUSC to another facility for a higher level of care, you have no out-of-pocket expense for those transports. We have people that do have chronic health issues that have been flown multiple times during the course of a year. They get no balance bill for the flights. Memberships are per household, so they cover everybody under the roof of the house, whether there's one person or 20 people living there, doesn't matter. No pre-existing conditions, they just have to be a resident of that household. I'll use my family just as a quick example. So I have my wife and my two kids. My son is 14, my daughter's about to be 12. Fast forward a few years, they go off to college. It will protect them while they're away at school because my home is still technically their primary residence. They're getting all their mail and everything is coming to me. Fast forward a few years after that, they're out and on their own leading productive lives. They would have to get their own membership at that time, but if they come back to live with me for whatever reason, they're protected. If I have a parent in an assisted living community, I have power of attorney over them, i.e. all their mail and everything is coming to me. It's considered their primary residence. It would protect them in that assisted living community as well. So I think you can see the underlying theme there is they just have to be a resident of the household, and that's really the only stipulation. We have currently 260 air bases across 32 states. Membership is inclusive with all of them, and that's both rotary and fixed-wing aircraft. In South Carolina, we're somewhat of a unique entity in that where most of your air ambulance services follow more of a community-based model. We're more of a community hospital hybrid. So here locally, we're the preferred provider for MUSC and the Children's Hospital. Go up to Florence, we have a helicopter in Mullins. We're the preferred provider for McLeod Health there. Go to the upstate, we have a helicopter and fixed wing aircraft at Greenville for Greenville Health System, helicopter at Spartanburg Regional, helicopter at Ann Med South Rehabilitation Hospital in Anderson. We just opened up a sixth base in Sumter in April, and we hope to be aligned with Palmetto Richland at some point during quarter one or quarter two of this year. So that would, if that comes to fruition, then that'll make us the preferred provider for all the level one trauma care facilities across the state. We have the FEMA contract for the United States, and for you NASCAR fans, we're the preferred provider for NASCAR in Darlington as well. what I wanted to introduce to the committee today is really two options that you have available to you as a municipality. One is just simply a business plan that would cover the employees of the town of, or the city of Isle of Palms. The other is what we call a municipal site plan, which is a limited version of the membership program that protects the residents, property owners, and long-term renters of the city of Isle of Palms. To date, we've had four municipalities engage in that with us. That's McClellanville, Kiowa, Seabrook, and Edisto. We're in front of other municipalities as well to introduce this to them and get it on their radar. It's a limited version of the program in that you have to be an insured resident, property owner, or long-term renter of the community. Long-term meaning you're getting your mail here, it's where you live. Insured meaning you have health insurance. For those individuals that are uninsured at the time of pickup under the municipal site plan, they're billed the Medicare allowable rate for transport. The other limitation is that the flight would have to originate in Charleston County. The pickup would originate somewhere in Charleston County, and then any subsequent flights would be protected. So again, if they had to go from here to MUSC and then on to another facility, those flights would be protected under the municipal site plan. Now, as residents of the community, they have the option to do what we call an upgrade, which is where the individual household can upgrade to full member status for a small fee, which eliminates that insurance restriction and it eliminates that pickup restriction as well. Takes you to full member status and just opens you up to all of our bases as opposed to being just limited to Charleston County. Generally, when we have a municipal site plan employed, we will do a direct mail communication on behalf of that municipality in addition to any communications that you send out to your residents and property owners to let them know what you all have done on their behalf. And then certainly I'm here in the community to educate and inform and answer questions for those that want to take their membership up and above beyond what the town has done for them or the city in this case has done for them. So that's kind of the quick elevator pitch. Can I answer any questions about any of it?
Well, we're always interested in cost.
Sure.
Saw what you, what McClellanville and Onondaga, or McClellanville was paying. And I'm trying to get,
you have to bear with us.
We're kind of new to this electronic.
No, it's okay. I've actually jotted down just some quick numbers. I mean, McClellanville and town of Edisto Beach are obviously a lot smaller communities than yours. So I have to have the numbers crunch for Isle of Palms, but I can get you what we did for Kiowa. So Kiowa's coming up for renewal April 20th. Their price did not change from last year, so theirs was $8,163 to cover that entire municipality. Seabrook was $9,269. I've gotten a quote for Sullivan's Island, which was $7,614. These figures are based on the number of eligible households in the community. So we'll look at the last or the most recent census data, figure out what the number of eligible households are. Generally, what we're doing is we're factoring out the Medicaid beneficiaries. The reason we do that is because by law, we can't provide a membership to a Medicaid beneficiary. We have to accept what the state pays for those individuals when it comes to transport. So we factor that figure out, and then we generally put a multiplier of $12.50 to that figure, and that's how we come up with the price for the municipal site plan. And then the individual residents, as I said, they have that option to upgrade to full member status for $35 for 1 year, because it's a one-year program that we enter into the town with. But we have a lot of residents that will go ahead and do, you know, multi-years over and above what the town does, just not knowing whether the town or city will renew it next year. So I give you those numbers by comparison, but if there's an interest, then I'll have the numbers run for Isle of Palms and put an actual formal business plan presentation together for y'all and get that over to you. Okay. Different municipalities have different protocols. You know, some will have me go through, you know, public safety, ways and means, and then to town council, and others are just a little less formal, just really depends upon the municipality. So
that's pretty much our
question.
Yeah.
And Chief, I think I heard you said you already signed up. Is this like for extreme emergency? Because we had the EMS will take transport regularly. Yeah. So we're talking about.
Yeah, this is generally life, limb, or permanent disability is when we're coming out, when speed is of the essence. So think of the helicopter as basically a mobile ICU unit. So we can start administering treatments and medications in there until a receiving hospital is designated that they can't generally do in the ground unit. So with our capabilities, obviously that because we're the preferred provider for MUSC and the Children's Hospital, we have not only a flight medic and flight nurse, but we have a neonatal nurse and neonatal respiratory therapist as part of our crew. So quite literally anything from a 9/10 of a pound premature birth on up to a full grown adult, we can handle those transports. The only reason we wouldn't be able to fly you is we physically couldn't fit you on the aircraft.
Chief Graham, what emergencies that we, because we have had helicopters come out here and take people off for different reasons, what causes that?
We've had from boating accidents and surfboard accidents, where surfboards cut somebody's femur. I understand that strokes can be flown if they...
Stroke, heart attack, yes. Head trauma, pelvic trauma. We fly for any number of reasons, allergic reactions, that sort of thing. I live right behind Roper St. Francis in Mount Pleasant, the new up in the Darrell Creek community. My son is 14, and he's highly allergic to latex. So you can pretty much go in any part of our house or any car, and we've got EpiPens in there. And you know, that buys you a matter of minutes when it comes to an allergy like that. So
yeah, it's like strokes. We don't generally... call the ambulance, I mean the helicopter, but under these circumstances we'd be more likely to.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. The fire department would be making the decision whether to call in the helicopter.
Right.
Generally, anytime somebody's having an event, you know, it's standard operating procedure for that household or that person. It's call 911.
Right.
Always call 911.
Sure.
Depending upon what they communicate to 911, the dispatch can do one of two things. They can put us on standby or early activate us, meaning we're spun up and off the ground and en route. And if they don't need us, we'll just turn around and go back. They will make the final decision as to whether we need to drop down and pick somebody up.
Okay, and the second thing, when you mentioned surfers, they're not, how do we determine, if you have a surfer, he could be from anywhere.
Right.
And they would summon, I'm speaking for you here, but they would summon whatever was medically necessary, regardless of whether or not it was
a resident
or not a resident. And
but then how do you approach that? I mean, then you have to figure
out
later.
Just to be transparent, we will fly you whether you are a member or not.
Right.
Membership, you know, being flown is not conducive upon being a member. It's just whether you, if as a member, you know, as a resident, you know, do you want to pay the big bill or the little bill if you do get flown, is really what it boils down to. So it's just an added layer of protection to what the insurance companies, in most cases, don't cover or may only cover a small portion.
So if the city goes with this plan, then, and I get taken, so to speak, then I would be paying whatever my insurance would.
Yeah, basically what happens is if you're in an event like that, you're going to be dealing with a whole lot of other stuff, obviously, given the extent of your illness or injury. So we actually become your advocate in that case, and we actually go to work for you, and we file through the insurance, and whatever the insurance company pays us, even if it's nothing, we accept that as final billing, and you're done. You know, you're going to be dealing with a lot of other big, ugly medical bills, as well as getting healthy again. So
if the city didn't go with something like this, what is the cost for a household?
Average for a membership,
yeah.
$65 a year per household.
Okay,
it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it's very inexpensive. So we do a 1 year, a 3 year, a 5 year, a 10 year. We even have a 25 year option. You know, so depending upon where you are, what your age, that sort of thing, what your stage in life. So
again, just one more question. So the city doesn't go, and Jimmy and I and whoever, how do you know? If he's having a heart attack, you're not going to ask him if he has the helicopter.
No, but
this
I think part of the public
kind of
education
after the
is
fact.
Yeah.
It'd be after the fact when y'all
right.
would
okay.
be dealing with the
right.
insurance companies.
Exactly. And in South Carolina, so if there's a downside to the program, it's this. It's that where we function like insurance, we're not an insurance company. You know, we're a helicopter company. So it's not a secondary or a supplemental liability policy. It's a membership program, so it works with our provider aircraft only. So what we can't promise people at the end of the day is that it would always be our helicopter or airplane that comes and gets them. In this part of the world, it's probably better than average that it's going to be us. We're, you know, number one call for Charleston County EMS. We're the preferred provider for MUSC. There's only two service providers in the state currently, us and another company called Air Methods. We're the largest privately held. They're the largest publicly traded. I don't know if you follow any of that online or not, but their stock was at an all-time low last year, and as a result, they're going through a bit of what I would call a consolidation, and they're closing bases to, you know, improve numbers overall. You may have seen that there was a base in Berkeley, Roper Berkeley in Monk's Corner, that closed down right before Christmas. That was one of their bases that shut down. So here locally, we are, you know, the only game in town to a certain degree. So.
One last question.
Yes.
Where is your land base at?
Headquartered at North Charleston Airport. So go back behind on Aviation Avenue where Signature Aviation is, the private aircraft company. That's where we hang her right there.
So if you had a call from Isle Palms, how long would it take you to mobilize and get here?
early activation, I mean, the flight distance is nothing. I mean, we can be to Kiowa in 10 minutes. So early activation is always key. So if we can be up and off the ground and en route, if we have to wait for an airplane to clear or something coming out of the airport, you know, the earlier we can be activated, the better it is. I'd say maybe 5-minute flight time, so it's not far at all. Okay. It's basically up and down, you know, right, for all intents and purposes.
Thank you. Anything else, Lynn? Did you have any?
So you touched on one thing. I was going to ask who your competitor is, mm-hmm, and you know, whether or not any of the other municipalities that considered joining the membership had asked for pricing from any competitors, or whether or not they had just gone with you all.
I'm sure they probably researched it. The other competitor offers a program. Right now it's the third manifestation of that program. It follows more of an insurance policy than it does a membership program like ours. The reason I say that is that in there, if you read the terms and conditions in there, they developed a membership program that somewhat mimics ours. But if you read in the terms and conditions of theirs, it talks about how the flight has to be for a medical necessity. That's one of the terms that that insurance uses to deny payment for our flight. There's also a limitation in terms of you can't have dependents over the age of 26 unless they're a special needs individual. Again, with us, it's just one flat rate and you fit and you ship. You know, there's nothing that would keep you off that helicopter except if we just physically couldn't fit you on the aircraft. So, you know, you're talking about a, you know, 400, 500 pound somebody, you know, so that's really the only limitation.
So the way this would work is someone is incapacitated, whatever. You're putting him in your bus or whatever and driving him to the rec center. Where's the helicopter going to land, I guess is the question.
We have designated landing zones, mm-hmm, throughout the island.
Uh-huh.
No, they're not all. There has to be room. Yeah. By 100, minimal. But we do have several designated landing zones. If it's a call from the beach, we're going to put them in a pickup truck and bring them up. There are other occasions where a ground unit might need to take them to the helicopter.
Mm-hmm. Generally, we need a spot about 100 foot by 100 foot, you know, no limbs, no wires, nothing protruding from the ground. Pilot can actually get it in a small spot as small as 50 by 50, 60 by 60, but that's really at pilot discretion, given weather conditions and all that kind of stuff.
I've landed one on the golf course, which was a beautiful landing zone, and we've landed one on the middle of the Isle of Palms Connector, which was...
And at the rec center, we've done
the rec center. And then we have several others, but those are the main.
Okay. Just for the committee's information, too, as you consider this, the last time we met with our representatives at Charleston County, one of the things that we were asking about is the fact that the quick response vehicle that was being kept over here pretty much all the time, is no longer here, and we are planning to have some future meetings with them. But one of the suggestions that was made to the City of Isle of Palms at that meeting by the chair of county council was, you know, that you may need to be considering and looking at more helicopter rides. This did not, and not in a fun way, but this had nothing to do with this promoting this program. It was more that I brought up the issue that one of the reasons why the quick response vehicle is so helpful to us in the peak season is because of the traffic issues and the fact that we can only do medical things up to a certain level, and then we need, you know, the personnel over here that has that greater level of training to minimize pain that people might be in and things of that nature. And in the peak season, sometimes you cannot get on and off the island expeditiously. So at that time, the suggestion by the chair of county council was that we needed to be more seriously considering more helicopter transports during the peak season. So that's just further information. Of course, that may also mean crowded landing zones, too.
It was always necessary.
Mr. Chair, Linda brought up a good point. Last year, we were promised a EMS vehicle out here basically 7 days a week by the end of summer.
It was the quick response vehicle, I think.
QRV.
Mm-hmm.
And it was here for a while, and then it disappeared. What happened?
They have indicated that the call volume that they had while they were over here did not warrant, and they provided the call volume to me. I don't have it today, but did not warrant being able to keep it over here for the length of time that they were keeping it over here.
So it's across the bridge at the...
Well, keep in mind, there's a difference between a quick response vehicle and a transport vehicle. So the transport vehicle is primarily, I believe, what is lodged on just the other side of the bridge. So that's designed to be able to render medical treatment and actually transport someone to the hospital. A quick response vehicle, they don't transport, but they can administer medications and do more advanced life support kinds of activities than our own fire department, as skilled as they are, is able to do. So, you know, while someone is waiting to be transported, so they're waiting for that transport vehicle to get over here, if it is a major compound fracture or something like that and they're in a great deal of pain, you need to be able to have folks that have the medications that can render comfort to that person while they're waiting to be transported. And in some cases, they can't even be moved because they're so they're so uncomfortable. And you would want to wait until you had some sort of medication on board before you tried to move them. So that is Linda Tucker's armchair psychobabble about medical things, but I think I have it down.
And if I'm not mistaken, Chief, I think they also changed their coverage zones. EMS did.
So one point of clarification.
It covers the whole.
With the term lodging. So they do their best to distribute transport units all throughout the county. But the problem that we've run into is that East Cooper will be depleted at a certain time period, and they'll be trying to move other units from West Ashley or even further over into the East Cooper area while we're still having calls. So, you know, we very well might have a point where we have a 9-minute response time or a 20-minute response time.
But that could be rare, and so it doesn't make our call need high enough to warrant having a vehicle.
Well, and our numbers were actually down last summer, so that's not a true
representation.
Right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes our numbers may be lower, but the seriousness of it is higher than elsewhere. But we've waited from North Charleston, from McClellanville, different areas for people to come transport. They've even used private ambulance services, which did not have proper communications, which may cause a 29-minute response time for someone in agony.
More paramedics.
Right. But on the average, if you look at if Charleston County Consolidated Dispatch provides you the average numbers, those average numbers don't, at this point in time, warrant having the quick response vehicle over here all of the time, thus creating more of a need to perhaps airlift someone out of here. Just something to think about.
Well, and if the committee did decide that they're interested in this, I think that maybe it might be worth we can take a quick trip. There's places right now in my head that are not currently designated landing zones. However, if we were to have a program for the residents, I feel confident that there are numerous places that for a short period of time could be made a landing zone, Palm Boulevard.
Well, I think we need to find out the statistics, you know, work out what the cost would be.
No problem. I'll have the numbers crunched for you, and I can get that back to you in an actual formal agreement so you can look at the terms and conditions and everything. And it's a 2-page document, 3-page document, so it's nothing that either side couldn't walk away from. So it's something that you can kind of read through pretty easily. Okay. It's just a basic membership application is what it boils down to. Two things I would add as you kick this around as a municipality. One, from other island municipalities, Kiowa, Seabrook, Edisto, because they are a vacation destination as well, we've had requests as far as a tourist plan to protect the visitors when they come during peak season. We do have a plan in place to protect the tourists. It involves the town actually getting involved in a fee collection capacity, which the other municipalities have kind of said, I don't know if we really want to do that or not. There's not actually, you can actually make money for the town doing it, and if that's something that you want more information on, I'm happy to get just the numbers for that for you. The other thing is if you decide to employ the municipal site plan, you as a business within the municipality, the employees that work here, you can actually do a census, what we call a census plan business plan, which is where you as the employer own the memberships. So you can actually cover the employees that work here for $35 a head, as opposed to, you know, whatever our business rate would be. Our business discounts for business rates are based on the number of employees that a particular business has. because you fall, if you do it, you fall under the municipal site plan, you would be able to get that $35 discount for the employees here as well. So just kind of keep that if it's something that you want to take a look at, and I can get the numbers on that for you as well.
Any other questions? Wes, thank you very much. If you could get it back to us with some figures, we would certainly appreciate that.
Absolutely. I'll have it for you.
Can we get them before the on or before the 15th?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll send an email when I get home, and I'll put a rush on it. So.
Great.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thanks again. Okay, we'll move on to old business. Chief B, encroachments in the right of way. How are we doing on those?
We've sent out 58 notices to Highland residents about the encroachments in the right of way. We've received quite a few responses back. We've got quite a few of them. I don't know the exact number, but quite a few of them are trying or say they're going to try and get a permit as required by the DOT to be able to place certain types of encroachments in front of their house. So we just started sending those notices out at the beginning of the month, last month. So we've given them a time frame, and so far it's moving.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for the chief? Next order in old business is the update on the golf cart parking at the front beach. Have we heard back from SCDOT?
We have not heard back from SCDOT. We've got a permit request into them. As you know, that where the road meets the our front beach right-of-way is actually in the DOT right-of-way, so we've had to go for an encroachment permit to cut that curb. So we're waiting on the curb cut permit from them to be able to get it cut. We've already got a contractor ready to make the curb cut once we get the notice. In fact, that same contractor is putting in the concrete bases for the kiosk up on the municipal parking lots as we talk.
Great.
This isn't on the agenda, but because we're talking about SCDOT permits, I just want to update you that we received word today that the permit request for the beach parking signs has been approved. So that is some sort of record time.
Wow. Then we'll move on to Munderland Pyrotechnics. Chief Graham, I'll let you.
Let me find it. I thought I was almost through it. Okay, so I believe it was after the January meeting, we requested some information for proposals for the same cost as last year, and one alternate show. I believe what he had said is the two shows that he's offering, neither one of them are scripted to the music.
Right.
So we have one that's slightly over at $30,100, and one that is $25,100. That includes the permit fee for the fireworks. From the fire marshal's office.
So the 25, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It includes the permit from the fire marshal's office.
So the 25,000 is virtually what we had last year, or we're paying 25,000 for something that's a little shorter than last year?
This one doesn't have the minutes. I actually need to go back and compare numbers, but the last one we went by minutes, and then he did the minutes, and he did what he was shooting.
Right. That's somewhere.
I apologize, but I did not compare line by line. But 20 to 23 minutes, I believe, is our goal.
Right.
There was another page that I don't see, so I might not have sent it.
All I got were these two.
Okay. I might not have sent the header of the page that explained these two.
I've got both pages.
No, there's another sheet that explained.
Do you have it in your email?
I don't know how far back when I got this. It's been a while. Let me check. Cool.
While we're waiting, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman. We were given a contract with the option to renew that contract for 3 years. I don't see what the question is as for anything if we just renewed the contract that we were given last year.
We got more than what we paid for last year.
But he gave us a contract.
Yeah, so if we if we wanted to stick to the contract, yes, we could get what we paid for, just a little bit smaller show.
Which would be a little bit smaller show because of the free things that he gave us last year.
Seems kind of like a false leader. I mean, give us a show, we paid for it. And
no, he told me last year that he threw in some extra.
We knew that.
So we're not getting that this year for the price.
I believe part of it was, and I don't want to speak for him, part of it was I believe he way underestimated the cost of setup.
Right.
He had already told me at that point that there were some things he wanted to do because he wanted us to see what they were so that we could decide if we liked that again. Okay, put together a proposal. Both are, put together a proposal. You both are with choreographing to music. So, did not add an additional charge for choreographing. Right back and look at the script. We ended up somewhere, these two proposals. I'm also going to shoot a more detailed show this year. We are going to have less random sequencing and we will create more purposeful scenes. He's really into fireworks. I mean, this you will be impressed even more this show. If we do the music, it costs around $250.
Music is $250 extra? That's all?
I believe that's included by the way he started the email.
Okay.
Do we?
Sounded like it.
But so we have a $25,000 proposal and a $30,000 proposal.
Correct.
Yeah.
So basically, if we liked last year's and we really, really, really want to like it, or we really, really want to love it, either way, it's going to be a good show.
I'd make a motion that we go with the $25,101, which is what we did last year.
Well, except it's not going to be.
It's
going to be a little less.
It's a little bit,
right.
A little bit less because we don't get all the three things they threw in last year.
Second.
So, discussion?
Discussion, go ahead.
Okay, so do we not know how many 3-inch and 3-inch and 4-inch?
It's all in here.
No, I'm talking about from last year.
Oh, I'll have to go back and look from last year, but the $30,000 show looks like it's about 2,000 more shells.
Yeah, one's 2,000 shots and one's 3,500.
Of the particular kind.
That's, I'm trying to compare apples to apples, and it's impossible to do.
I left the orange at the station.
It's okay. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot, believe me, I promise. You know, music means nothing to me. I'm out there watching the fireworks. So you made a motion for the first show, $25,100. Is that correct?
Right.
No more discussion.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's the one. Gotta get back to the top here. I don't know.
You know how to do the little thing?
You gotta do the little thing.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. I know.
Icon with the four squares on.
Yeah. It's a little faster.
Next on the agenda is update on progress on overgrown lots.
That would be down on Will's Way. We've sent notices out to two property owners down on Will's Way, 17 and 18 Will's Way. We got a response from the owner at 17. He's going to be making improvements to the lot, cleaning it up. The one at 18, we got sent back to us that was not received. Since then, we've found a new address for that same home lot owner. So we've just sent out a notice to them, the same notice to them, and hopefully this one gets received, and we'll get notice back that they will either comply or we'll have to go to the next level of, you know, getting the city
right to
cleaning.
Okay. Any questions? Next on the agenda is the status of the solar speed signs for 41st. I understand we're close, right?
We just got the poles in, the poles and the equipment to put them in. In fact, they are over there now putting the poles and the equipment together, programming the signs, and we hope by the end of the week we can have them out and functional up on 41st Avenue.
Right.
And now, just for the, just for everyone's clarification, in case you get inquiries from the community, it's really important for everybody to understand that we have to go through the process of getting permission from the state in order to do these things. So it's not just a matter of, you know, you guys approving the expenditures and us purchasing these things and installing them, but we, you approved the expenditure, we got permission from DOT, which takes a period of time, and then, you know, we're now installing them. So they're going to be up and operational before the peak boating season, so that will be good.
With the weather the way it's been, if we get them, we'll have them before then, and that'll be mm-hmm. great because of weather. Weather's really drawing people to the island. And item F, consideration of schematic drawings from Leolio for public restrooms, was a mistake. It was not supposed to be on our agenda.
Sounds real property.
So we'll move on to new business, and that's discussion of the concept of a senior check-in service.
So I think we had a request from a member of another member of council that that we look at our service that we currently provide, which is we call and check on people that have signed up to receive calls. But the suggestion was made that it would be perhaps a good idea if we considered being a little more assertive than that, and those people who are on that list or who want to be called every day, that there be like an everyday call. How are you doing today? You know, you need anything, like more than just what we have now, which we call when there's an approaching emergency or something, you know, like that. You know, when you get those alerts, check on mm-hmm. the elderly, check, you know, we do it then. But this suggestion was for like an everyday check-in. Like they would sign up for it that they wanted it, or their family members would sign them up that they wanted it, and there would be a call every day. And then if someone, you know, was non-responsive or didn't seem like they were having a good day, then there would be a list of numbers that the city could call to alert family members.
Seems like a great program.
It does, but then a lot of questions though.
Right.
Who's going to run? Who's going to call?
Personnel
who's
hours.
Who's going to track personnel hours? Right, right.
Well, and also not everybody's home. So if we call the number and they don't answer, and we have to send out a search party, then
right.
I don't like animated any more than anybody at this table. But the only way that could probably work is if an
alternate number or something,
or an animated message went to them.
An automated message went to them.
We have a couple people who can do that.
If we were doing it, I'd say once a week would probably be the most we could do, because that would be very time consuming. And if nothing else, even if it was only once a week, it would let the person on the other end know we truly are concerned, and they'd be more likely to call before something became an emergency.
Mm-hmm. What if they were to call in to you? And, you know, then, you know, here's this
secretary.
List, and you check off the list.
Well, there's a bunch of people on that list.
Well, okay, but that's just a thought. But a gentleman I talked to about this, and forgive me for was, you know, an older gentleman, a little bit older than I was, and lives alone. And he does not have family close by. Mm-hmm. And I think he's here like 6 months a year, but he'd like to have... or maybe it is wherever his other home is, they have this, and the resident calls in and just says, you know, it's like a life lock. I'm okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the
day.
Problem is that we have a part-time secretary,
right.
and mm-hmm. when they take a break or take a day off, then that would go to the police dispatch, and
I hear you.
Right. I don't want to miss something and then be held responsible for it.
I think we need to keep it in the back of our mind, because we've got a more elderly
aging population
here.
If we could get the buy-in to have the
Automated. You know, if we could get people to buy into the service where they get a, you know, message. If it would be every day, then a message. If you need us, here we are. Here's a number, whatever. But
and then
a real person.
The possibility that there are most likely systems out there.
Well, we may already have access
that
to
that. Recognize
the Charleston
numbers
County
and all that they're getting called from.
Yeah, the bridge. I can't remember the name of it. Everbridge. That might actually do that.
So. I will say that, you know, based on friends of mine who are elderly and have had problems, one call and y'all have always been down there, and I mean y'all are the greatest when it comes to assisting our elderly, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, we appreciate that. We're going to do it no matter what, but I always had that fear, what if, you know, you called and they didn't answer and we sent some search party and broke the door, or say we failed to call, we were going to call on Monday but we got tied up in an emergency and we didn't call and they really needed us. I think I'd rather put the ball in their court saying, we are here for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you have any questions or concerns, call us.
So right now someone could call you and say, I'm alone and whatever?
I need help getting to my bed. We get those
calls. Okay.
Well,
not
right.
A, not for
right.
Not, not
or
for
they
not
fell.
We've had
yeah.
My propane
in here.
Smells funny. Can you come check it out for me? I can't lift this. Can you please move something for me? We get those calls often.
Okay.
I have a snake. And I don't want it there. And it's been from people on our list.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess, how do you get on your list? These are people that have...
This is over the years. We used to call it special needs list, and that didn't sound right. So it's now priority assistance, and we announce that it's available through the webpage when we do the... fire prevention stuff, when we do things down at the rec center, and the list is maintained by our secretary. And so we try to keep it up. If we find out somebody's no longer with us, we take it off because we don't want their loved one getting a phone call.
Right.
And, unless they want to get on the list. But it's been pretty successful to keep it growing
mm-hmm.
and to keep
what
it accurate.
What kind of number of people do you have?
I'm
just a ballpark.
Thinking I probably have around 50.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's usually word of mouth at this point because, you know, people that don't go to websites are not going to find it there.
Right.
Unless we
right.
suggest
and we've
they
got a lot
there.
Of people that never go to websites.
Mm-hmm. And it may have been 150 because when we had this last storm, we went to every single one of their houses after calling them. If they said they were staying, we then sent someone to their house to try to talk them to leaving.
Okay.
So let me think about different ways something like that could work.
We'll leave that with you. Sure.
Okay.
Thank you. Next item is discussion of parking kiosks at Breach Inlet.
I think
we do have parking there, but I think we looked at that in the past. And
I think that this was another thing that I believe at a council meeting someone suggested that we might look at that as a as another safety issue for controlling the organization of the parking at that location. A couple of just thoughts that I would share is that, you know, that is not an area where we really encourage people to go swimming or wading.
Exactly.
But it's certainly crowded.
But it is most definitely crowded. It is used as overflow parking in the evenings by the restaurant that's there. And, of course, that could be easily structured, you know, so that the kiosks are not working. You know, after 4 p.m. or something like that. Or it could be that the restaurant buys, you know, a certain number of passes or something to give out to people or reimburses them for the parking. So it could be worked out. It's just a matter of whether or not
wouldn't the first step, it's not our property, right?
We would have to get permission from SCDOT.
That would be the first step before anything.
And your motivations for parking, controlling parking need to be safety issues and organization issues, not revenue producing issues.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
My opinion is, number one, that's the most dangerous location around for swimming. And why would we want to collect money for people to park down there who would possibly, even if it's well marked, no swimming, to collect money, you know, for people to park there and possibly go swimming?
Well, don't you
think
perhaps...
People are parking there and possibly going swimming
now.
Don't you think perhaps charging
them would cause them not to go there?
I'm just letting you know that I think it's a wrong move to go.
Well, I didn't put this on.
I'm giving you my point of view.
I think it's worth looking into to see, you know, to see if the state could be nipped in the bud. If the state wouldn't give us the land, this becomes a moot point. Does it get too crowded? Is the parking unsafe there the way they park? Yeah, it's pretty packed sometimes. And I don't think it encourages anyone to go there if we start charging parking. It may discourage them.
But we're talking about, what, $12,000 for a kiosk and probably $800 for a pad, something like that, Chief?
$2,000 maybe.
$2,000 for the pad, okay.
Yeah. $2,000 for the pad?
Isn't that what we're paying for?
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
A piece?
The concrete pad.
I think the pad itself was $1,200 to $1,500.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, $1,200
yeah.
$1,500
so,
the kiosk is
$12,000.
Right.
Yeah. We're talking 20 places.
And then we would have to service the kiosk. So we would have to, you know, collect the money from it and service it.
The return, I don't think, would
doesn't work.
I would, and this is total speculation on my part, but if we felt that we needed that lot to be better regulated than it currently is for safety reasons, stop people from parking on the sidewalks and things, because of course I know sometimes you all have passed by there and you see as many cars as is possible packed into that lot, which sometimes includes a little encroachment over onto the sidewalk. I would speculate that DOT would not have a problem with our putting a kiosk there. That's just total speculation, but they did own Ocean Boulevard when we put the parking meters on Ocean Boulevard, so it's not
too different. Okay.
You know, from that. So I'm using that as speculation as to why I think that they likely would allow us to do it. It's just a question of whether or not we would want to do it.
Well, I kind of think.
I think we need to look at it a little more.
We need to look at it, and I think we're
benefit analysis.
I'm going to say we're into the season now. We're not,
not fully into
the season, but I think if at this late date if we did decide to make any changes, it would not be
I just want to throw this out there. If you're looking for more orderly parking up there,
yeah,
they shouldn't be parking on the side where the sidewalk anyway.
Right.
You need, we could. The DOT needs to go out there and put some signs that say no parking on this side of.
Mm-hmm. Simple.
Yeah.
Okay.
If that's what the ultimate goal is.
Then maybe we can contact SCDOT.
And then if they put up those signs, you guys are responsible for policing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Turn it into emergency parking only.
Nope. Helipad.
I'm a little tight.
Okay.
50 feet.
Any more discussion on that? We'll think going to the SCDOT to get some no parking signs would be a good idea.
Up to them.
Oh, that would be up to SCDOT,
right.
But I think we should ask them. Ask them about it. Yeah, I'm not suggesting we say we want to do this. They take a look at this, and if you think you want to put up some signs, you can. Also under new business, the report on the internal audit in the police department.
Okay, so I will take this. As you all know, as a part of our new audit engagement, every audit period, the auditors randomly select a department to audit. And for this year, the police department was selected. And they tested several different areas and had no findings in the majority of them. One test that they conducted had to do with checking bank deposits, actual money that was deposited in the bank, against the information that we had. And in checking that, There was some small discrepancies, a few hundred here, a few hundred there on several different deposits. So, and that has to do with the kiosk collections, the meter collections. So that can mean, and you all will be getting a written report from the auditors, and then as part, what becomes that written report is also the city's response to the suggestions that they're making in there. So what you'll ultimately get is their findings and our written response. So in doing the forensics on what they found, several things, you know, it could be several things. It could be city employee error. It could be the money is transported by an armor card service, so there could be changes between the collections and the bank, you know, via the armor card service. There could also be a problem, you know, at the bank with the person who's taking the money and then actually depositing the money, or there could be a problem with the actual machines in what they are saying that the collections are. So the money comes out of the machines, it has a tape that shows, you know, what's being collected there. The money is then taken to an area at the public safety building and, you know, the deposits are prepared. At that point, it is then picked up by the armored car service and taken to the bank. Because our current protocols involve two employees at all times, during, you know, from the point at which the kiosk is accessed to the point at which the deposit bags are made, involves two employees working together, we think it's extremely unlikely that there would have been money taken from the point it was taken out of the kiosk and prepared, you know, to be transported. So we think that the problem is at a different level than that, and we're beginning to try to do what forensics that we can to determine that. But one suggestion that that the police department has, and we have decided to go ahead and pursue, would be to put to add a camera to our current camera system in the room where the money is taken in the public safety building. So that adds one more level of protection that shows, you know, the employees will know that, you know, it can be seen, the actual money can be seen, and their handling of the money can be seen. So that's one of the protection mechanisms that we'll put, because we think it's not likely that it's employees, but, you know, this adds that additional level of protection at not a huge expense to the city, and protects our employees from being wrongly suspected, right. Which you know, none of them want to be. So we're continuing to try to figure it out. We've been in touch with the Parkeon people, probably our, what we feel like is the highest possibility is, well, we think there's two possibilities. One is that the machines are not counting something, like the change is not being counted correctly in the machine. So the tape that is being generated by the machine is flawed. The other likely scenario is on the bank end. The money is transported in a sealed bag via the armored car service. Mm-hmm. So that would involve, you know, actually having to tamper with those bags. Yeah. So we think that is unlikely for somebody to go to that amount of trouble for a few $100s. So we think it's either, you know, on the Parkeon end, and we're trying to do some forensics there, or it's on the bank end, which we will notify the bank. We notify the armored car service as well, so that they can do their own level of checks with their own employees. So the good news is, with most of the tests they performed, they found nothing. So that's good news, and where we want to stay focused, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Any other new business? Move on to the highlights of departmental reports. Chief Graham.
Okay, Chief Smith, do that.
All right. We'll flip to the first page with the calls.
Oh. Excuse me one second. Everyone should have gotten it on. Okay. This just went out today.
Everybody got it?
Good to go. My battery died. I'm even though I'm plugged in.
Oh. Do you need a paper cup?
No, I'm good. Oh. I'll just listen and follow along with Marty.
All right. Page one, we have our call summary. You'll see that on February 5th, personnel responded to a structure fire at Mount Pleasant. Rescue 1 was requested to provide breathing air support at a working structure fire. Rescue One's crew went there and filled air cylinders. You'll see that we actually did that twice this month, on the 26th as well. On the 22nd, personnel responded to investigate a report of three storage tanks that had washed up on the beach. Myself, Linda, and Donnie were all out there, basically playing detective on exactly what these tanks were and exactly how they got there. So United States Coast Guard had information when we contacted them about the owner. We contacted the owner and made sure that they safely were removed from our island. Tugboat operator who had lost them through the night was very appreciative of getting them back. You know, we should have looked into that. So
I'm hoping that when the bids come in on the beach restoration and the dredging, maybe we'll see some reward in
get
that.
Get a discount. And then on the 27th, personnel responded to a report of a gas leak at a home on Palm Boulevard. Upon arrival, the resident told the crew that the gas odor was detected underneath the home. Personnel made entry under the house and found a broken low-pressure gas pipe that was leaking. Personnel secured the flow of gas. And they used the gas meter in the home as well, made sure that everything was in acceptable limits. So they also notified the owner to contact the gas company to make the necessary repairs. So if we flip over to page 2, this is our call report for the month. And page 3 breaks that down a little bit further. You'll see that on page 3 we had a total of 47 calls. District 1 was 26 calls, and District 2 were 18 calls, and then we had 3 outside of the Isle of Palms. That's broken down to 29 resident and 18 non-resident, with a total of 23 EMS calls. And those EMS calls were broken down 12 resident and 11 non-resident, and we saw 23 patients in February. So moving on to page 4 is the call breakdown for Wild Dunes. Total calls were 11. They had 6 EMS calls, and there were 6 patients seen in Wild Dunes in February. And then if we flip through 5 through page 8, that's a breakdown of some run times. Nothing really that jumps out that is remarkable on these. Pretty average times. If you look to page 9, you'll see that EMS's average time was a little over 11 minutes, and ours was just under 5 minutes for our response time. So if we flip over to page 10, this is our incident reports for the month and how they are broken down into what type of calls we ran. If we flip over to 11, you'll see these are our supplemental activities. For the month, we had 11 total. One smoke detector installation and also a smoke detector check of a residence. One station tour. 2 public education appearances. 1 public appearance. And then 6 public assists. And so we'll break those down a little bit further later in the report. Page 12, you'll see our calls for the year and the subsequent years. We were 7 calls more than last year this month. So just a slight uptick in that. I think it's due to all the beautiful weather that we've been having. So, page 13, for our completed pre-incident surveys, we did 7 in February. And then page 14 is our fire inspection report. Our fire inspector inspected 13 occupancies in February. On February 10th, he brought Knox boxes online at the Isle of Palms Marina Store, which is very beneficial to us to have that Knox box working and have all the information and everything that we need right there, just with the open of a key. So that helps us tremendously. On the 16th, he met with the fire safety company and referenced an inspection at Morgan Cove. And on February 21st, he met with the project manager at the Palms Hotel and referenced the fire protection issues. So on page 15, that's going to be a breakdown of our training report. Last month we talked about kind of our what we require training wise. February we did 2,199 hours, which is a breakdown of 64 hours, a little over 64 hours per person. All personnel received training in fire control and completed their annual OSHA required confined space training. All officers received training in reasonable suspicion of alcohol for supervisors, and all engineers received training in intersection safety, and all firefighters received training on fire hose. Those were our key elements of what we covered in training for the month. All personnel successfully completed South Carolina Fire Academy auto extrication class, which you can see some of the cars that were in the municipal lot. We've gotten a couple of questions in regards to those, so they should be moved here before too long. One of our battalion chiefs successfully completed an instructor orientation workshop for the Fire Academy, the 1150 series firefighter training. One of our battalion chiefs also served as lead instructor for Basic Auto X that in a class that was held at Somerville Fire Department as part of their recruit school, which is good. Gets our people out in the community as well, so we can tell them more about our fire department. We had two engineers who also served as assisting instructors in the course. Our fire inspector successfully completed the National Fire Academy Advanced Incident Command System, the I-400, at St. Andrews Fire Department. Our fire inspector also successfully completed the National Fire Academy's Fire Chief 1 Challenging Issues course. The two-day program was held at the Fire Academy, which is a great course. One of our engineers successfully completed the Instructor Orientation Workshop for Fire Academy Fire 2 course, and that was held at Goose Creek Rural. And one of our firefighters successfully completed Fire Academy EVDT Emergency Vehicle Driver Training course. So, and that's a week-long program that was held at Mount Pleasant Fire Department. So we have a lot of people doing a lot of different training at a lot of various locations, as well as here on the island. So that's good. The next page, page 16, breaks down our training report and each individual's hours of the month. Page 17 is our annual water usage broke down. This month we had 46,000 gallons that was used for back flushing trucks. All right, page 18 is just a breakdown of the monthly water log usage. And then 19, we'll get into the maintenance report. If you look for the 1st, the 6th, and the 9th, we had a lot of quarterly and monthly fees that, we have our monitoring fees, our radio receiving fees. We also have our pest control. Then if you look down here on the 14th, we had our annual support for our maintenance for firehouse software. So that was a annual fee that comes out there as well. And then also for our mobile data terminals that came out on the 14th as well. If you look down a little bit further down towards the bottom, the 22nd, we had work done on engine 1001 and ladder 1001, and we are still awaiting those invoices. Engine 1001 had the auto ejector outlet replaced, and then ladder 1001 was cleaned, lubricated, the stabilizers. We had a manual cab lift pump that had gone out that we fixed. Gotcha. All right. And then repaired a light and replaced the air filter as well. So, I just said don't do that. Engine 1001 remains out of service, awaiting a new radiator. Estimate arrival date is March 28th. All right, so under the personnel report, on the 8th, the fire inspector attended the regional fire marshal's quarterly meeting at North Charleston. We're sad to report that on the 9th, on the 9th, we're sad to report that we lost one of our engineers. He has gone back home with his family. So we do currently, we lost an engineer. He was a great employee. So sad to see him go, but wish him all the best. But we also had a promotion as well. We had one of our individuals promoted to the rank of engineer following the successful completion of his written and practical testing. So, one of our battalion chiefs attended the monthly meeting at the Charleston Area Training Officers Association at North Charleston. One of our battalion chiefs also, and the fire inspector and our police sergeant met to develop policies regarding fire investigations. So, and our fire chief attended the monthly Charleston County Chiefs Association meeting in North Charleston. One of the things that's not on here is one of our other battalion chiefs also went and spoke at the Indy group
which is very interesting. Their acronym stands for I'm Not Dead Yet, which I found that to be very interesting. I told them I was a little disappointed because I thought I was going to get to meet some race car drivers. So, jump to page 22. We'll get to our public relations report. On the 9th, one of our firefighters conducted a station tour for a family from Charlotte. And on the 10th, A-Shift Station 1's crew conducted a public education safety presentation at Station 1 for a kindergarten class at Jenny Moore Elementary School. And we also did that on the 13th as well. So there was a lot. I would say probably about 150 kids that came. Right. So that was good to get them at the station. On the 15th, Tower 1002's crew installed 2 smoke detectors for a resident on Palm Boulevard. All detectors were tested and functioned correctly. A-Shift Station 1 stood by on the beach behind the windjammer for the polar plunge, which was interesting. Not something that I would do, but we stood by. We were there. On the 23rd, y'all were talking about this earlier, we assisted a resident at 31st Avenue who had fallen out of bed. She had fallen onto the floor, so they helped them back into the bed. And then later, we sent another crew back for the same reason. So those are, typical situations that we get called for that will go out and give our assistance. B-Shift Station 2 assisted with Wild Dunes Security after their truck got stuck on the beach behind Summer Dunes Lane. So. Medical, it is, but it happens.
It's easy to
the best of us. So it happens to the best of us. Report for our medical loan closet. A visitor to the island was loaned a wheelchair and a walker with a seat, and also another resident of the island was loaned 2 pairs of crutches. So let's see. The special operation vehicle log. We had 2 situations where we used rescue equipment. One was a missing person, and one was also a medical assist. That was on page. On page 24, you'll see our overtime summary. We had 2 pay periods for the month. Total for the first pay period was 367.5 hours, and then the second was 651.25 hours. These numbers obviously include our 2 workman's comp employees that we still have that are out, and then some other sick leave where we had someone who had a family emergency that had to travel out of town this month as well. So, and then 25, 26, and 27 are some notes that we received from the month just thanking us for our different service. Any questions?
One question.
Yes, sir.
On the emergency vehicle driver training, we have 6 on duty at each station at any time. Is everyone 5? Is everyone trained, or is it just a few?
Yes, everyone has EVDT, emergency vehicle driver's training. So that is a requirement. It's one of our base classes that we have to operate emergency vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, those are unique vehicles
right. That
yes. We couldn't drive.
No. It would be a little hairy. You might drive it. I don't know if anybody else would ride with you.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. For the committee's sake, would you explain what a Knox box is?
Okay, so a Knox box. So I was going to get the inspector to explain it. But Knox box is basically a box that is there. It has a universal key that is put into it. And then that keeps any other keys that we might use for the site itself and or any special hazards or any pre-plan information. It's all kept in a box. It's almost like a mailbox kind of thing, if you imagine that. So you open it up and you'll pull it out. For example, we have a facility close to a public safety building. They have one that we use kind of frequently. It's got a set of keys in there and everything else, so we don't have to worry about forcing doors and everything else. So it's very beneficial for them as well as us to have that access to those keys and everything else.
Oh, yeah. Saves a lot of time.
It does.
Question. If a business that had many offices in there wanted to buy a Knox box and install those keys at their cost for the access of the fire department or police department, could that be done?
The police department would need us to open the box for them, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
just let the fire inspector know, and he'll be happy to help coordinate. Because we cannot, he'll order it for you through a certain venue. We don't just order them.
No, no, I understand that, but I happen to know one of those kind of places.
Yeah. We know somebody where you can get it from.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Jason. Chief B.
All right, month report for March. Start off on page one on Thursday, February the 2nd. Just add a little humor. We had a collision that occurred up on the front beach, and that's not the humorous part. In the 1,000 block of Ocean Boulevard, we put a description out of the vehicle involved, suspect involved. Mount Pleasant was able to locate that vehicle over on Riviera Drive over there at the town center. The driver admitted to hitting the vehicle over here and stated he had intentions to settle up at a later time. He happened to be found also to have in his possession some drug paraphernalia, so naturally he was charged and arrested and taken to the Alcannon Detention Center. So he can really settle up now. On February the 10th, we had a liquor law violation. This is one of these public education things that even on golf carts, at 11:30 at night, which is illegal to be driving a golf cart, you can't be driving and drinking or having your possession alcohol. So they were charged and released. And then over on page 5, the 31 of 43, the community service section. On February the 1st, PSC Louise Hardy and James Cooch participated with the teenagers luncheon down at the recreation center. There was about 45 people in attendance, and they, you know, worked with the teenagers and in attendance down there, and also heard the presentation on the Smart 911 that the dispatch center gave. On February the 2nd, Sergeant Derek Ambus and PFC Hardy attended a job fair at Trident Tech. And I will say that we're down to one position now as far as officers go. Then on February the 4th, ACO Inurado, Beach Service Officer Larry Heilman, and Communications Specialist Jane Stewart did the doggy day at the rec center, and they gave out about 84 city dog licenses. We had a very good day. February the 8th, PFC Louise Hardy and Patrolman Robert Forsythe attended the Lunch Buddies over on Sullivan's Island Elementary School, the pre-K through fifth graders. So they sit there and have lunch with them. Interesting program for them. And as Jason just pointed out, Chief Smith, just a minute ago on February the 10th and 13th, we also had Officer Hardy and Tyson participate and work with the kids from Jenny Moore on topics over there. And then on February the 21st, Dylan Reynolds, PFC Dylan Reynolds, met with Cub Scout Troop 59 here at the Isle Palms Church for the doing dust for fingerprints and how to solve crimes, a little CSI day for them. And then finally on page 6, February the 27th, we hosted a meet and greet over at the Public Safety Building. And we had very good participation. It was for the residents from Breach Inlet to 10th Avenue. We ended up with about 35 residents in attendance. So we had a very large crowd. It lasted about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours. In fact, I think we had three show up with about 20 minutes to go. So it was very interesting. And then finally, on February the 28th, we received notice that the Isle of Palms, based upon the 2015 FBI crime statistics and population data, were recognized as the 17th safest city in the state of South Carolina.
Yay. Does that help for our CALEA?
No.
But it sounds good.
It does.
Tough
one. It still doesn't mean you should leave your car unlocked or your house. Won't stay the safest city if people do that.
Exactly. The dispatch report on page 7, we had a total of 4,055 calls during the month. Of those 4,055 calls, 3,335 were for the police department. As you can see at the bottom of the page, they broke down in patrol requests of 2,631. We had 35 officer-initiated registration checks, and we had 669 service calls, which comprises the 3,335 calls. On the next page, page 7, we had 213 traffic stops during the month compared to 284 in the month of January. If you look further down on the page, traffic collisions, we had 6 accidents during the month, 9 year to date, slightly ahead of where we were last year. So we'll see if that number keeps trending like that. And then on page 10, the incident reports, we wrote a total of 237 reports during the month. And on the next page, the arrest report at the top of the page, we had 15 arrests, and we've got 32 year to date on those arrests. And then at the bottom of the page, property value stolen. While it says property value total 2017, $137,585, $131,000 of it was out of one case. So,
jewelry, right?
That was reported, and it occurred sometime last year between the months of, I want to say August and October, but it just got reported to us.
Wow.
Mm.
So we are working that case. And then the animal control report on page 13. They issued 8 citations during the month. They picked up 14 animals. Of the 14 animals, 10 of them were dogs, and they also picked up 4 birds. Of the animals they picked up, 12 were released to owners, and 2 was transported to a vet. And we had 4 injured animals. The next page, page 14, investigative report. We had 10 cases assigned during the month. They carried over 4 from the month of January. They closed out 7 cases during the month, and continuing to be investigated will be 7 cases that will be carried over to the month of March. And then if you look down, we had 464 hours on overtime. That's on page 16 for 2 pay periods during the month. And then finally, the livability report, we had 4 noise complaint violations called in. Of the 4 noise complaints, 1 was unfounded, 3 were founded. Though 3 founded ones resulted in a warning citation being issued, all were before the 11 o'clock hour. And that's the monthly, well, I will say at the bottom of the page, the 58 encroachments that I talked about earlier is listed there. And that would be the monthly report if there's any questions.
Yes.
Question. After this past Saturday's Wild Dunes property owners meeting annual, it was almost funny with their coyote discussions, but I don't see that many being reported. Are we experiencing a downturn, or is it in between pup season and...
I don't know.
I got my fingers crossed.
It was in February of last year that we were hearing from a lot of people,
right,
so
right.
You know, it's now March. Maybe the February time period wasn't as prolific this time. I will say that this is, you know, again, just information. We have an abundance of squirrels right now, it seems like to me. I don't know if anyone else has noticed that,
but yes. You
know, that things like that provide prey for them that would enable them to maybe not be after other things that get people so upset. So, you know, I'm figuring that if they're around, they're not bothering people's pets, and so they're.
A couple of those reports were in the same general vicinity,
mm-hmm.
over by Will's Way.
I did see out on the social media somebody posted a picture of a coyote swimming across
right,
the waterway.
Right, I saw that too.
Maybe,
oh, really?
Maybe they're leaving.
Well, they posted the picture of something that looked like a large either coyote or German shepherd swimming across the intercoastal. I don't think it was a everyone
not
speculated
definite.
That it was a coyote, but it could have been someone's German shepherd or a German shepherd that was running free that got hungry and could smell food over on Goat Island.
Coyote that followed the doctor in, it ended up
being
a dog.
Stipuletti, yeah.
Yeah, gosh.
It was a funny report at Wild Dunes. They had 4 traps and coyote 0.
Yeah.
They lost 1 trap.
Yeah.
Lost 1 trap.
Going across the golf course. No more questions.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chief. Miscellaneous business. We've got March for the next meeting, but
sorry,
that Monday would be April 3rd.
Right.
That's kind of early. How is the 10th, Marie? No,
I can't. I'm out of town.
Can't make the 10th.
The 3rd is great for me.
We can do the 3rd. I can do the 3rd. We just might. We'll do an oral report from.
Chief, are you going to have a substitute that day?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The chief will not be here that day on the 3rd, but he will have someone else.
You mean he's taking vacation this year?
We let him do that from time to time.
Great. Great. Okay, then. Right. Then April 3rd?
First for me.
2 o'clock. Okay.
Motion?
No need for executive session. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Chief, are you going to wait on your encroachment letters? Are you going to wait until the first batch does everything they have to do before you send the second batch out? What's your plan of deployment on that?